And about a year ago, I met Kathy, and I was immediately impressed by this woman that has incredible vision. And I don't know what I expected the Markham Museum to be, but I guess I expected a kind of conservative attitude, sort of protectionism. This is our museum, and you're proposing a project that will create these site-specific installations in these heritage buildings. But it was the complete opposite. It was sort of like, yes, I understand what you would like to do. You want to reinterpret archives. You want to reinterpret buildings in the area. And this is something we fully support. So this is very exciting for members of the team. I'll say a few things about Kathy or what I've come to know. She is trained as a chartered accountant, something that is a bit of a surprise.
She's just a certified general.
Just that, okay. So that was the early part of her career. And then she went and did some training in archaeology and began to work as a museum curator. She worked in Oshawa, and she worked at the Markham Museum. And then she took on a project at the Aurora Historical Society to create a cultural center. And she was able to raise a significant amount of money to actually establish this center, hence the coming together of the background in accounting and work as a curator. Not surprisingly, and good for them, the Markham Museum hired Kathy on as the new director about 3 years ago.
4 years.
4 years ago. And she has really been changing things there. She hired a new curator, Janet Reed, who was formerly at the Textile Museum downtown. Also, a person that thinks outside of the box. I think recently Kathy went with Francine Perrinet from the Varley Art Gallery to China. They were invited by the Canadian Fund for International Exchanges through Culture.
International Understanding.
Through Culture, and the Chinese Friendship Association. So they went to China. There have been several relationships developed with Chinese artists and other cultural workers. Kathy is involved in the Ontario Museum Association. She's also involved in the Canadian Museum Association. And with both those associations, she's involved in organizing state-of-the-art, cutting-edge conferences. So museums are really not the places that they used to be. These are places that are very active in communities. She's involved in a very large grant with the Surrey Museum, the Scarborough Museum,
and the McCord in Montreal Museum
to actually create these new youth programs, bringing youth involvement, enhancing youth involvement in these museum spaces, and creating new forms of interpretation. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Kathy to York University.
Thank you. I'm going to give a broad overview of where we were 4 years ago and where we are today. And if you have any questions while I'm talking, just interrupt me. It's not formal. It's a very it's very high level. I'm going to give a very brief history of the museum. It was planned by the Historical Society in the 1960s. And opened to the public in 1971, and the structures that we have on site, of which there are over 30, were moved in the 70s by local people, and some service groups helped, people like Rotary and other service groups. But the important thing that I recognized when the museum started all that time ago was that it was developed out of a genuine desire to create a place to celebrate the history of the community. There was pure community engagement. These people were really, really engaged in the project. And they really, really wanted to preserve the past. However, over 20 years, Markham changed, the museum changed, and the program that was delivered was very much the static program from the 60s and 70s, very much the iconic travel timeline with historical figures and all this kind of stuff. And it wasn't engaging with the new community at all. And so quite a while ago, almost 10 years ago now, a new master plan was written and was endorsed by council in 2004. And key aspects of that master plan work, there was a recommendation for the construction of a collection building to move all the collection out of the attics and basements throughout the site, and also improve landscaping to better connect with Markham Road. We were right on Markham Road. And some of the recommendations just were duds. A children's museum and a heritage carnival. These did not connect with the old community or the new community. It was basically putting a nice shiny bauble on a very drab site. I returned the boat ride in 2009. I've got a carousel in storage that might be a little bit political to sell, but we're just going through our collections committee with that now. And hopefully we can introduce that to council soon. And the important thing I saw was that it was a drain on resources. Just to maintain it, to get the tickets to run it, was over $12,000 a year, and the average revenue was $600 annually. So not only because they didn't connect, but we had hardly any attendance. And the master plan also recommended a number of structures for demolition. And this is, if you've never been to the site, this is Markham Road, 16th Avenue. It's a very built-up area now. There's now condos being built here. There's plazas at every corner. TTC runs by York Region Transit, so does GO. So the possibilities to get traffic in were really high, but they just weren't coming in the door. This is the collections building, which is there now. At the time this was drawn, it wasn't. This was all kind of scrub at the front of the site. And throughout the site, 25 acres, you can see this mishmash of buildings that have been interpreted for years as a village, but they're all from different time periods and different classes of people. And the families that were being represented in the houses were all different time periods, and they never would have even lived in a village together. None of it made sense. So, and also, there's a very good pioneer village just over here. So there's no reason for us to even be attempting to do that. And because there didn't really seem to be a direction with the village, there was kind of a haphazard grouping of structures on the site. So these are a few of the structures that we deal with on site. This one here, the Hauser House, was moved to the site in the 1970s. It's never been used. It's heated and it has water to it. It's never been used. It was moved to the site as it was used as a home, so inside it's derelict and run down. The Strickler House is basically gutted inside, which we do use for programming because it's just a bare open space. It has no running water, just power though. And funny little structures like this honeymaking house that was out the back of an old farmhouse was moved onto the site kind of randomly with all the honeymaking equipment. So it didn't. And then we have a train station with the Acadia rail car, which is a nationally significant rail car. Trudeau, Diefenbaker, Princess Margaret traveled across the country on it. And yet it's here, plunked down in Markham Museum. Now, it could really fit in any town that has a railway going through it. Markham does. But the expense to maintain this is absolutely incredible. So we, as a staff and a board, we talked to the public, and we tried to figure out how in heaven's name are we going to make this place connect to Markham today. And we thought about all the things that were going on at the site, our apple orchard and our key events. And also, if I could just go back really quickly here. There are two, the one building original to the site, Mount Joy Administration Building, an old school building, which is now our offices. And the first use of the property was as a pottery. We sit on a clay bed. We're on the Rouge watershed. So there are evidence of potteries all through here. The first excavations were done in the 70s by the Rong. We've got all the reports, all their collections. University of Toronto did some more investigation. We've got all those reports, all those artifacts. And then when the building was built, we found more of it. We had another excavation, and we found lots of pottery. And then a recent excavation, we thought we'd find the structures, and we didn't. So we think at some point they were demolished. But this was a really important part of when we were looking at how we're going to interpret the site. And I'll talk a little bit more about the archaeology lab that was at the site when ASI was excavating, and how that helped us make our program direction, which is to use the three main themes of settlement as it relates to our environment and the technologies we use to adapt to life in Markham. So this is to the present date. We're really interested in why someone would choose to make Markham their home today, and where they're from, and the influences they make on the community, the influences we make on them, that kind of push and pull of culture and environment, and where you land at the end of the day. And I think, personally, that's what makes Markham the interesting place it is. Why I can walk out my door at lunchtime and I can get Sri Lankan food, I can get Italian food, and it's not just the food, it's everything else that that the new people that have chosen to make Markham their home have brought to the community. So on top of that, it also linked to our funny little honey house, because we have an apple orchard on site. And for some reason, because we work closely with Rouge Park and TRCA, our apple orchard is self-pollinating. We don't have to bring bees in like most orchards do. So we can have honeycombs, and we do have bees on site that have made honey-making hives. And also, the pottery links to the soil. All of it, we sit on a clay bed, which influences our site interpretation. And this little girl's eating an apple from an apple orchard at one of our events. And I talked to her mom before this picture was taken, and they were new arrivals to Canada. So all these things we started thinking about, and that's how we came up with this theme. It sounds very, very vague, but it's not as broad as you think, because suddenly there's no reason to have a heritage carnival or a children's museum at the site. They don't even fit into those three little basic themes. So the other thing we did was look at having 34 events a year and cut that down to 8, and then we cut it down to 7 again this year. This is, again, Apple Fest. This is our headline event. We get 5,000 people to that over the weekend, and Apple Fest, more than any of our events, fit in perfectly to the new program direction. So the annual events we have, another shot from Apple Fest. We introduced Family and Family Day when it was declared a new holiday, Winter Fest, and that is, we have a skating rink on site, we brought in ice blocks, and we did some interpretation with maple syrup and things like that, and it drew in, for its first year, 2,000 people, and it's grown ever since. So we knew we'd made a connection. And nowhere on site is anybody pretending they're a pioneer or pretending they're a person from the past or saying the date they lived in. It's very much the present, because we still make maple syrup today, so we can show different methods but not get trapped in all that boring stuff that turns people off history and doesn't connect with new people in the community. And this is another shot of Apple Fest. That's last year. So the first thing we did was take a look at the exhibits we had on site and say, what will work? And immediately things like our blacksmith shop. We had it completely redone in 2010 and rebuilt and had the forge rebuilt. And we had some staff actually trained by a professional blacksmith. It was quite work intensive. And two women who call themselves the Iron Maidens, some of our younger interpretive staff. And what's really good about it is that we don't just talk about blacksmiths in the past. They were probably the biggest profession in Southern Ontario. More people were blacksmiths than anything else. So it's important historically, but we still have blacksmiths operating today. At Eastern Avenue, there's a blacksmith that operates, and he does a lot of movie prop stuff, but he also does a lot of stuff for houses. So everything that's done in our blacksmith shop is used to make repairs on the buildings now, today. Our print shop as well, we actually hired a master printer, Stephen Sword, and it's very mathematical actual printing and doing it properly rather than just sitting and thinking you're doing it properly. So we incorporate that into the math curriculum units, and it's very complicated. In fact, we had two of our staff members drop out of the training. They couldn't keep up with it, and I never had to do it, so I just go and watch it. So, and the other thing that's important, and you'll see these pictures come up again and again, is political engagement. If you don't have political support, the people that have elected your community, then you're going to be lost. You really have to keep them up to date with what you're doing. Carolina Moretti, we sit in her ward, she's our local councillor. She's probably the most supportive councillor I could ever hope to have on our board or to be in her ward. And so for the opening of the print shop, the mayor, Carolina, Stephen, John Bowie, the chair of our nonprofit branch, which I'll talk about too. We developed that for separate fundraising. Paul Calandra, a local member of parliament. Textiles. Having Janet come from the Textile Museum was really fantastic. And she helped program staff develop a textile lab. And every culture has a textile tradition. So we're able to examine, right now, if you go into the lab, you'll see touch boxes from all different fabrics, and then different ways that different cultures have worked with the fabrics and different dyes that you can use from even from our own sites. It's very, very popular. It's actually led into a fashion program, which is our most popular program for young girls, guides and brownies, and then we've built it into a birthday party program as well. The pottery lab, this was done during the second excavation during the construction of the new building. The Burns and Eby potteries were on site in the 1860s, and there's been at least four professional excavations of the site, because one was done this past summer. And because of my background, I was maybe a little bit more bold, because a lot of my undergraduate work was done in archaeology, mostly Middle Eastern, which is in the Middle East. but not Ontario. But a lot of the archaeologists are working in these for-profit archaeological companies. So when I went to them and I said, I've worked in a lab before. It's not rocket science. We could set it up on site, and that'd be interesting for the public. And I know a few staff that would like to be trained in it. So they actually, we paid them the contract, and they paid our staff to supervise the lab. And then also we have here, the only paid person in here at this point is this woman here. The rest are volunteers. All of these older women were fascinated by this. So they would come and clean and number pottery, and the public could walk down the middle and watch what they were doing. It was really, really popular. And what it also did, too, is a lot of our counselors would come in. We have a counselor from, Logan Kanapathy is from Sri Lanka, and he's Tamil. And that community was going through some horrible times within Markham at the time. And he came up to me and said, Kathy, this is so cool. I have a pot at home that I brought from my village. It's from the communal kiln that we had in my village in Sri Lanka. And I thought, whoa, there's another thing that is universal to all of us. We all have a pottery tradition, except for Inuit populations. So the clay, what we've decided to do is move ahead with having a pottery on site, and a local potter who's retiring is going to donate most of the material and his skills as we get into that. We've just got capital approval last year. We have it, have a study done, and we're ready to start construction in 2013. The camps were our first success. In 2008, we only had a contracted camp service. And then we, Andrea Carpenter, our program coordinator, who's absolutely skilled, designed some great, great camps. And by 2010, our revenues were $115,000. And to date, our registration is over 230,000, and she still hasn't got revenue from the holiday camps that are going to be happening over the holiday season. The thing that's really important about this is the kids want to come back for other stuff. So they bring their parents back for events. They bring their parents for tours of the stuff they've seen. And then they also start having their birthday parties. And then they go to school and start talking about us. And so the teachers are phoning and saying, my students are saying that you were doing this at the camp. So that's helped build this program has helped build our business in so many ways. The other thing that's really grown out of the new direction is the interest in the gardens and the 25 acres as an ecological site and the things that have grown there, and it can grow there. So this is an older plan of what the site was supposed to look like, and we've changed it a little bit. The collection building's here. This is Markham Road for a bit of perspective. The first garden that went in was here. There's an old dry pond at the back of the site for a subdivision back in here. And we worked with TD Friends of the Environment and TD Friends of the Environment. And they actually built in here an actual frog and pond and also a rock garden for snakes. And that's the garden these children are in now. So over the years, it's grown up very, very quickly. It's become very green, very, very fast. And then there was another garden put in here with Water for Tomorrow, which is it only needs rain. Now, this past summer, we did have a bit of trouble and we had to water it. And then just last summer, we finished up a garden here, which is where the textile lab is. Out the front, we worked with Toronto Region Conservation Authority through Rouge Park and TD Friends of the Environment to build native plants and also incorporate some of the plants that could be made into dyes for the textiles. And then just finished construction right now is another garden here by the print shop, and it's by our biggest rental use site, the church, and our hall, and it's been made into a water garden, which again doesn't need to be watered, and it's all native plants, and it's got some nice little areas that to use for photography. And also the other thing that's going out of, I've got another garden to talk about, but and there's also a rain garden over here in this area. So we can incorporate that into all our education programs and into our camp programs, but it also means we get help because our partnerships that we've grown with Rouge Park and TRCA, they come and program it for us. And the other thing too is Rouge Park now asked us if we could help them with their Rouge Days kickoff events. So we have the kickoff night events, and that's I think it's May. And so we are the kickoff for the whole Rouge Park thing. And so now Rouge Park is a national park. And they've now approached us to say, well, you've had this relationship with TRCA, we want to keep that going. So we see a lot of benefit to that because what it does, we're not trained as environmental scientists, but they bring that with them and they can help train our staff and they come to our site and help program it. The last garden, this one is the one good thing about volunteers, and I'll get into that a little bit later, is that you draw on a huge amount from the community and the goodwill that comes out of that. The unfortunate thing is sometimes bad things happen to our volunteers, and one Jenna Ray Fernley was only in her late 20s. When she came to us, she left a very high-pressure job and wanted to relax and garden. And so she was gardening at the site, and 6 months after joining us, she found out she had a very aggressive form of lymphoma. And her partner raised a lot of money trying to find alternative therapies to save her. And they were unable to save her. And actually, the day before she died, she said, "I know I'm never going to have children, so I want to leave a legacy. I want to give all the money you've raised for me to the museum to build a garden for children. And I don't want to call it Jenna's garden. I want to call it the children's garden." So it was $17,000 they raised, which isn't enough to do something substantial. So we worked with the city and we worked with our Friends Foundation. And the city has given double that amount, matched it for us. So the garden is going to be basically, as you walk from the rain garden and the waterless garden, you walk around another building, it'll be joined by a stair. And it's a circular garden, and the flowers will attract bees and butterflies. And there'll be little stones with nice sayings on them. And so it's built around a sundial, which is on the site at the current time. And the sundial fits into our theme. Sundial was a gift from the Historical Society for the year 2000. So things like this come out of the community, and suddenly we're attached emotionally to a lot of people in the community. And we are going to have a special planting in the spring with Jenna's family. This is the rain garden around the print shop. The print shop is here. The rain garden's all through here, and this little walkway will lead around another building here into Jenna's garden. Garden bounty programs. The guide and brownie groups really like what we're doing, and we fit into a number of their goals for the children that are involved in the program. So now we have a badge, and we're recommended on their site. And other relationships have grown out of the new program direction. Centennial College Post-Degree Arts Management Program. I know it says U of T, but that's one of the students that we've hired out of the program getting something signed by David Suzuki. And with that program, this is a group of students that we got to know through the school last year, and we all ended up actually going into the class and talking about the work we do individually at the museum, programs, curators, even our rental staff and our frontline staff to explain how the business of a museum works. And we developed a really close relationship with them, so they would come to the site. We had a lot of their students on co-op, and we hired Susan Mackey, who is up to us, one of their star students, and she's working at the museum now. And of course, Landslide, which is very exciting in 2013. Education programs are the most difficult thing for a museum, because once you've lost credibility in the community, it takes an awful lot to build it up again. And all we were offering when I got to the site were days in the village, in this very wonky village. And there were very few bookings. So Andrea worked with all the people I've talked about and the curatorial staff, and came up with a different way of offering programs for our new program direction. So the teachers can pick from a menu of items. They can have a full day or a half day. And by working with our program staff to design it, so you can see the general store, discover the role in the community, hands-on activities, measuring merchandise, and using scales and balances. So even though we're still using the site, we've interpreted it in an entirely different way. And blacksmithing, the three C's of blacksmithing, how to assemble a wheel, and it's not pretending you're back in time and learning facts and figures, it's entirely different. And it's growing really, really quickly. Even with this last job action, we were fully booked last week. The other thing that's been a great benefit is our new building is LEED Gold qualified, and it hasn't got its official designation, but it is qualified. It has groundwater heat pump system, rainwater system, cistern to flush toilets, ground source heat pump, heat recovery unit, zero escaping, and recycled contact and low emission materials, and as local as possible. It also has the front hallways filled with natural lights, and we will offer tours, LEED tours, and there have been a few groups that have asked for those specifically. And of course, it's very popular with the TRCA and Rouge Park people to bring groups in to see the building. This is the migration into the building after it was built. Curator Janet Reed is there with staff. We brought over 15,000 artifacts from basements and attics. And also Ben, one of our curatorial staff, we did a full audit of the collection, and that's still ongoing as we're going through everything. The thing that's really important about Janet, this is Janet in the main gallery, as it's after all the artifacts have been moved in, and she's working with the textile collection and for part of the textile program and the fashion program, and her knowledge is really, really a great thing to have at the museum, and she's really good at engaging the kids. And I love the fact the curator goes out there, because a lot of curators won't do this. They want to guard their little artifacts, and she actually opens up a textile for a bunch of little girls and boys. And her openness to the program is something that I really wanted to come through when I asked her to come to the museum, and she's been more accommodating than I ever thought a curator would ever be. And this is our new exhibit that's gone on, just to give you an idea of what we're trying to do. The 12s, rather than focus on the War of 1812, because it didn't happen in Markham, we thought at least acknowledge the year. And what we did was work with a couple of local stores, fashion stores, and with Kickshaw Productions, Jonathan Walford and his partner Ken run the Fashion History Museum out of Galt. And I don't know if you might have known them from the Battish Shoe Museum. Jonathan was a curator there for years. Incredibly talented a company, and they also have their own, a huge collection of their own fashion. So a lot of the stuff in the exhibit is theirs, but we mix it in with, there's actually a car here from our collection from 1912, and then here is the runway of 2012 clothing that was donated from local stores. And then in the front, Jonathan and Ken happen to know a Saudi princess, so there's a whole couture piece in there too. And so in there we're going to hold some teas, and but we've had a lot of people through it. And what the whole design is based on, like, People magazine. So it makes it look like People in 1812, 1912, and 2012. And upstairs, we have an exhibit on barns that Janet curated. And at the top, you kind of see a bit of that exhibit. And that's basically about the transition of the land as the barns come down. And I know it's a big issue in Markham because there's hardly any left. There's two on our site, though. This is another exhibit within the main gallery. This is what we did to look at Markham history. It's called What is Markham? And this is the early industries in Markham and what was on Main Street. We focused on the Main Street. There's a lot of interactives where you can go on a screen and point at an address on the Main Street. You can see an image of what's there now and then what was there at different times in the past. And this is the opening of that gallery, and this is, I'll tell you a little bit about the friends. This is the mayor with Carolina Moretti here. And forming a nonprofit to fundraise isn't easy. You have to be very careful how you do that. So we worked with legal, and we put together the terms of reference and a memorandum of understanding with them. They're appointed by council, and the town actually does take their bank accounts and manages the funds for them. You have to be careful, of course, that we're a public institution, so we have to make sure they're really tied to the institution. They don't start floating off on their own. So there's lots of caution if you're ever working at an institution. You do get a separate fundraising board that you really have to make sure they're tied through that MOU. And some of the people that we attracted that have really, really been dynamic. Edmund Yu is a designer at the time he was Reich & Petsch. He's now moved on to another design company, a very well-known award-winning exhibit designer, and Carolyn Moretti, our counselor, Martha Mingay, a local lawyer, and from a very old, well-established, wealthy family, all the right connections, and she's an absolute gem as well. Mayor Scarpetti, Debbie Wong was born in Scarborough, came to Markham, and to raise her family, and she's an amazing individual. She's our treasurer. John Bowie is our chair, and he's retired from Omers, Canada, so he brings a business perspective. And Jim Baird is a retired engineer who's also a really engaged volunteer. He works with our maintenance committee. Volunteers are probably the most valuable thing we've got out of the change in program growth. In 2008, we had 48. Today, we have 400 youth, 200 adult and seniors, and 13 on the Friends of the Markham Museum Committee, and these are some images. Ray Fugeman runs a little train, and those three girls had Halloween students, of course. These are gentlemen that actually keep their steam fitting license through the TCCA to run one of our steam tractors at one of our events at Applefest. at the top in the foreground, David is the pay staff, in the back, the two red shirts, we call them red shirts, are volunteers helping with our camp program. The youth engagement part has been so enriching. It's taught us so much at the site. We noticed that when we started hiring them, that because of the nature of our work, we had to give them job descriptions. We had to give them something that they could put on a resume. We didn't want them showing up and guarding a door. And so one of our staff people, Enzo Greco, who's the most social out of us, volunteered to go into the high schools, first of all, and set up a booth. And he'd go right up to kids and he'd say, "I'll have a pizza night. I'll do anything just to get you in the door." And the first night we had a few kids show up to the orientation, showed them the orientation, and they liked what they saw, got their job descriptions, came in to do the job, and it's just mushroomed and mushroomed and mushroomed since then. And we noticed that the kids went way beyond their 40 hours, and what they liked was the structure, that they were called in for two nights of training. We had a reward system in place. We gave them a t-shirt, we gave them a job description, we gave it to them on paper, and they had a schedule, and we really value them, and they could see that. And what happened was, especially with the children of new arrivals, they started telling their friends, when you go to Markham Museum, it's really friendly, it's really safe, your parents will feel okay that you're there, and you can practice your English. This is what we found out later they were saying. So it's just started ballooning and ballooning until where we are now. So some of our students have grown on to be staff. This is Hugo. He's now a staff member. He was a volunteer for years. And here's another girl that's just started as a volunteer. She's a red shirt. And almost all of our white shirts were red shirts at some point. So what? I was at a conference in St. John's 2 years ago and went out for dinner with Madeline Callahan, who runs Scarborough Museum. And we ended up hooking up with the Surrey Museum and the McCord Museum, and we're talking about, we're all from these diverse communities that are changing so rapidly, especially Markham and Surrey. It's like urban growth just gone crazy. And also, and being so diverse, it felt like, how do you cope with this? But we all noticed that we were appealing to teens, that something about what we were doing, our individual sites were appealing to teens. So we decided to apply for a CIC Interaction Multiculturalism Grant Program. The lead was Scarborough. And what happened was we got it. And each of our sites for 3 years has a full-time youth mentor to build the program and then build a how-to book. So at the end, each of us has to have a publication on how another site could do what we're doing. So the Youth Mentorship Committee, under the direction of Youth Mentorship Lead, who's KDF at our site, assist in the development of volunteers and youth at Markham Museum and within the community. So the whole purpose of the grant are to help facilitate events, school programs, and camps run by Markham Museum. Furthermore, the committee is responsible for participating in workshops that will focus on Canadian democratic values, leadership, communication skills, workplace experience, and team building. The workshops are to enhance prior knowledge as well as develop the skills of the participants for use in their encounters with youth, community members, and their future endeavors. And the group has named itself My Markham, My Community, My Markham Youth Community. We are absolutely astounded by the kids that we attract and how brave they've become. And some of the things that have been most touching to us, and I know it sounds probably cliche, you guys are at a university, kids are feeling very comfortable, but I'm amazed the number of kids who feel comfortable about even declaring their sexuality to us and saying, you know, my mom wouldn't understand. Well, yeah, your mom would understand. And the support that we get, in fact, there was one boy who ended up completely changing his whole appearance in the time that we were with him, and his mother actually came in to thank him later. They create their own little synergy in their group, and I know when to back off. I know when I walk in and they shut up, because I look like their mama or sometimes their grandmother, probably. So when they volunteer at events at night, over Halloween, a group of them were there, and they said to me, can we stay after everyone's gone and show a movie against this wall? So I went to Katie and I said, are you going to be here? No alcohol, no this, no that. And she said, well, you're not going to stay here. And I said, no, they wouldn't stay if I stayed here. So we've created this environment where there's an environment of trust amongst themselves, and I trust them. I know they're going to be good. I know they're not going to cause any trouble. And they stayed and watched their movie, and they had a good time. So this is the mentors right now. These are mentoring the other 200 volunteers, youth volunteers that we have.
These are the blue shirts.
These are the blue shirts, yeah. These are the youth mentors. This is the stage in between white shirts. and they designed their own logo. Some of the kids are doing incredibly, incredibly well. Some of them, they've asked if they can stay on longer. Michelle at the end has a few issues, and she has asked if she could stay with us even after she's gone on to, she's actually in post-secondary now, and we said that she could. And so this is, it feels really good. It feels really special, this program. It's the mother of two kids who have grown up, I think, if this makes them feel good in the crazy world of being a child of a new immigrant in a urban area, then I think this is one of the things the staff feel the best about. And committee is made up of 15 members who mentor over 500 volunteers. And they've hosted their own food drive to benefit the Markham Food Bank. The other thing they did was they became David Suzuki trained. And all that is basically to guarantee that their programming does keep the environment in mind, and they have to have an environmental project. So their project is to hook into our relationship with Rouge Park, and which we already do all these things, Native Species Garden Summer Camp programming, and they want to hold a big picnic in the park this summer, and they want to host their families. And not just for this group, for the 500 volunteers, like have a big picnic for all the 500 volunteers with their parents. Also, at a conference that was held this past spring, the CMA, I was invited to take part in the group that was going to China, and I was able to convince them that Franz and Perrineff and Varley should come with me too. And this was held in Beijing by the Chinese People's Association for Friendship with Foreign Countries and the Canadian Fund for International Understanding Through Culture. Dr. Nelly Yang here is a sponsor, and she happens to be from Markham, which is probably why they allowed two people to go from Markham. And this was such an eye-opening experience for Francine and I, and it just made me realize full circle what we've done with our programming is very much what's happening in China right now. China, with the museums, we saw the traditional ones were names and dates and kings and emperors. And we had before, within local museums within Ontario, have had the first settlers and the names and dates and all these things and boring information about attached to houses. In China now, contemporary art is very much about how the community has changed and how you express yourself through that. And I'm feeling that now it's something that more museums in Ontario should do, is get away from the village and the names and the dates and all these people that new people cannot connect to. And so Francine and I were absolutely thrilled with the trip and really honored to be asked. And this is us at the National Museum of China, which was full of artifacts and emperors. It was beautiful stuff. I've never seen things like that in my life. But when I went to 798, or where Kaohsiungdu, I think it's called, that was just an eye-opening experience and so different to this. So I was really, really appreciative. Some of the people that went, Bruno Schill from University of Montreal, Harbourfront, Victoria Dickinson, the head of CMA, John Cavity, and Museums of Science and Tech, all through here. And so it was kind of a mixed group. Oops. And the only other thing that I had was a new thing that's coming to the site. The grounds have a little corner off to the side that we didn't own. It was kind of scrappy. Mm-hmm. Oops. And my bearings here. New building. Right at the top. This is right at the top corner. That's been acquired for the museum. And we're working with parks. So it will be open to the public. And hopefully that top north west corner will be more inviting. Right now it's kind of a bunch of buildings that are in various states of repair. And we want the park to somehow pay homage to the potteries, because we're pretty sure that's where they were located on that piece of land. So that's going to be a major thing that goes on over the next 2 years, is bringing that piece of property into the program. And then also developing the potteries. And of course, next year, the work with Jeanette is going to be a big thing. So that's basically it. Thank you for listening. Does anybody have any questions? Or?
I should ask you a general question, but I have a very specific question. Is just what you were talking about, those houses at the edge that are, well I think you talked about them forming that kind of park also. And, so I wonder if you can speak to the difference between the museum and the idea of a park, because I know that that's been something that you've been thinking about.
Well, we sit on 25 acres in an increasingly intensely built-up area, and my dream would be to open up the gates and let people use the whole site as a park. It's 25 acres and it's beautiful. It's all the liability that comes with that and the safety of the structures. The park will be the first way we'll have an unfenced program area. And what we do with it, I'm open to anything, really, as long as it's interactive, that it feeds in from the north, that it's a safe place. I'd like to bring the sidewalk further in from the street. And there's also a theater group that uses it that would like separate parking. So it's...
I guess what I was thinking is it possible to make it free, like so that it's just open?
The site?
Yeah.
Ideally, that would be the case, that we open... And if you actually want to be inside the structures, then we would charge a fee. The problem with free admission inside the structures, and I think that Varley faced this past year, they got money from Bell to be open free. You get crowds of people, and they're not people that necessarily are used to being in gallery space. And I was in the gallery one day, and there were tons of kids going up to a Varley with their hands like that, and I went, "Francine, look, look, look." So then you have to pay for gallery attendance. So then suddenly it's costing a lot more than just the free admission. Then you have to clean the bathrooms and all that other kind of stuff. So inside the buildings, if we're ever free, we'd have to have the money from somewhere to support that. The grounds, I would love one day to open them up, but right now we just can't.
I love the transition and the interpretation of the role of the museum in the community. But I can't help wondering, you know, as you distance from that sort of focus on points of colonial encounter, have you faced any resistance to that? And there are people who are really attached to that interpretation of Markham.
True.
Really.
And actually, it's very surprising. Some of the people I thought would be resistant have been the most accepting.
Oh, okay.
Like Ray Fugeman on that little train, loves it. He says, "I love coming here and seeing people. Finally, they're here." And the Historical Society lead, I thought we'd get some resistance from him. He loves it and understands it, because we don't ignore that they were there. We've just woven them into the story a little bit differently. And there are two people that are resistant. And you know who they are. You know who they are. And we invited them to sit on our collections committee with Janet so they can provide advice into exhibitions. And I actually was reading emails from Janet about how we're going to deal with that first meeting because their ideas are very much about how they make it about them. And this is what we try to explain to them. It can't just be about us that are involved in the place. We work here, we're volunteers. We have to be here for everybody. And that's the hardest thing to get across. One of them wants us to put a street with their name on it. And those are the two people are resisting. Very traditional. They want, and also, they want everything out of the collection area on display, everything, all the time, without any theme to the exhibitions. And we thought the way we were going to get around that, and for the most part it's the work, our storage areas are glass. Like you walk into that exhibition hall, you can see everything in storage. It's unrolling storage. You can look right in and see it, so it's constantly open to the public. So most people understood what we were doing there, but they seemed to think that we should still bring it out and hang it everywhere. So honestly, I've had two people, but they're still volunteering with me. They still... Gunther still comes in every Wednesday and helps and comes and says, "How you doing? I'm going to come to the volunteer dinner." And, but he still thinks that he wants... They're still engaged. I haven't had anybody that's really violently opposed, and they're still willing to sit on collections committees.
It's not a threat. If you love history, people care about it. It's a great thing. So I think that's been the response. Is that actually, you know, the place used to be the former director said you play tackle games.
Yeah, it was.
No,
it was.
Best. It was. Now, which would you rather?
So.
One other thing I was going to comment, that new piece of land buffers the museum entrance from, what's it, Wings and Ribs or something?
Wild Wings.
It's really ugly commercial development around, and that's providing a wonderful buffer. And across the street, that whole commercial section is actually earmarked for intensification. So it would be a lot, you know, would be more condos. And so the demographic is changing very, very rapidly.
Yeah, it is. And the children of a lot of the people that are opening up businesses around the museum are volunteering. And they, it's interesting to see their take on what we're doing. And some of them have actually come and been vendors at some of our events. And they feel perfectly welcome, but they're not traditionally who we've appealed to in terms of vendors. So they're from, one's from Trinidad and new. And he said his daughter loves the place, so he said, can I come sell, I don't know what those little patty things are. And so his family is coming to all the events and everything. It's just very subtle and soft. It's not, it's amazing to me who we've engaged and who knocks on our door and said, I've heard about you. My daughter talks about you. Oh, okay. So those businesses are tying into us in some way. Oh, that's you. Yeah, it's for Janine's project. They're interested, yeah.
Yeah, but also other.
Yeah, not as much as though for Janine's project, though, because it's Francisco's approach to you, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Why do you think that you would be attractive to teens? Because I've wondered in driving around Markham where. And we're working with Unionville High School and trying to understand the mentality, you know, where kids are hanging out, like Pacific Mall or where do people hang out? And
I think that's part of it. I don't think there's a lot of places for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the appeal. Especially if you're not interested in hanging out at the mall or Pacific Mall, and there's only so many movies you can go to. That the other thing, too, that I didn't even mention here, we started a snowshoe program 2 winters ago. And even though we didn't get snow last year, we would still offer them because it was young singles coming out to it. And then this year we're going to offer hot toddies after the around the campfire. And then we thought, well, this because there's nothing for young singles to do. So maybe it's because there's... Maybe it's because there's nothing else to do. They land. Yeah. Well, and at that night they put on little headlamps on their snowshoes and off they go.
Just to follow up to that question. So when you talk about the required volunteer hours, the 40 hours, you mean that's required by the school for graduation?
Yeah.
Right? So so I think that's interesting too, is that it's sort of, I mean, it's really clever to have mobilized that requirement, I think, to kind of draw them in, because you're right. I mean, if you give them a title, I mean, you know, even just a job title and a kind of sense of formality. And so my question is, do any of those kids, after they've completed their 4 years, you say they often do more, do they sort of continue to be involved, you know, in the following year? Like, is it continue?
Well, it's, and I don't work as closely with them as Katie does, but they'll start to log the hours. They log the hours every day, of course, and our sort of our senior volunteers and our curatorial volunteers. So as we start to see them accumulate hours and we see their faces more and more, they might be approached by the mentors might approach them and say, are you interested in being a mentor? Or are you interested in being a red shirt at camp? Now, that's a whole screening process we go through, because at camp, our camps are now fully booked. So in the summertime, we have 200 kids on site and we hire 50 staff. But we have a volunteer for every staff member. So they have to go through intensive training. So if they see that as a job opportunity, I think they see the possibility of getting something out of it. But then they also socially get something out of it. And to the point about stuff to do at night, Katie had a meeting last night, and she's got another one tonight, a training session. Basically, if you're interested in volunteering for camp over the holidays, you be here at 8 o'clock at the museum, blah, blah, blah. We will have Timbits or something. But the Timbits don't even seem to matter. They just show up because it's something for them to do, and it's all people their age, and it's all young people up there. I'm not up there. The oldest person up there is Katie. And they probably think, I'm away from mom and dad. I'm out at night. This is kind of cool. And they're all people my age. And maybe that's the reason it's grown. I don't know, but it's been. And that's why I think CIC approve the grant, that we can put down what we did, because we didn't know it would work when we started it. It did, though. We've asked to be references on a lot of applications for not only jobs, but there's a teacher's college. We've been asked to write letters of reference for, because the volunteering is an important aspect of that application. And police, and also every volunteer has a police record check, and they have to pay for that. Every single one of them has a police record check. It's part of your job application. With your application to be a volunteer, you have to submit a clean record.
I think it's sort of really an interesting connection to your mission, because I actually see kind of maybe what's happening for them as a form of settlement for them, for the youth, right? Like that part of what they're experiencing is their own settlement in Markham through the museum, which becomes that technology of settlement. I mean, I think it's really interesting to sort of think about how it reconfigures the institution of the museum and the community, and in a specifically like ex-urban community that doesn't, I mean, I think urban communities could benefit from similar institutions, but they may not have those other activities, and so it's very interesting.
Oh,
but even more than that, it seems like you're also creating an alternative social space for youth to gather, where there's a lot of high degree of self-organizing, which might not be available elsewhere.
Yeah. That's the part that makes us feel so good. That's the part that we feel really, really good about. That's been the surprising outcome, is that part of it.
The mall has a Friday night.
Yeah.
Friday night at the mall. Date night for the singles. It's apparently wild.
Yeah, I've heard. I've heard that. Yeah. Some of our older paid staff go down to it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting you say that too, because we were featured in Newcomer magazine. I didn't put it in here, which is a immigration magazine, and it was Michelle, the little skinny little girl at the end, who said some very nice things. She was interviewed by Newcomer, and her picture's in there, and she was saying coming to Canada was hard enough going into high school. She felt awkward enough, and she didn't speak English very well, and her parents speak none, so she's the interpreter for the family socially and in every way. And she's one of the ones we worry about, and we keep an eye on her. She tends to really take a lot on, and she's had a few little setbacks personally, so we end up getting involved with them more personally than we thought we would, but it's all worth it. That's how I'm growing. That's how I pay half of Katie's. That's how I've hired a new communications person. I've hired an exhibit animator to try and get away from the tour guide thing, do some sort of interactive stuff. So that revenue from the camps is generating an awful lot of other activities, so we get away from that toured thing, which we have to do because we've got all these buildings out on site. The main galleries don't have to be toured, but the rest of the site does. So that's what the revenue's done for us, is provided growth.
Is the David Suzuki grant for the mentorship committee, is that ongoing?
It's not a grant. It's a training that he provides, and it basically, that means that we can put his name on it, which I know sounds kind of cheesy. But young kid, I didn't know they treat him like a god.
Right. Does that happen every year?
Yeah, you can send a group down for training, and they went downtown, or where was it they went? maybe it was the University of Toronto Scarborough, they did the training. And it was a group of different youth groups from across the city went for the training, and they got the stamp of approval from David Suzuki. And that picture I had of Susan is her getting something signed by David Suzuki. She's got a big grin on her face. And then they had to make a commitment, and that's the Rouge Park was the commitment.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So how many went down to the training?
That would have been the mentors at that time. There have been about 13 kids, and then Katie and Susan went down too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that happen again this year?
I hope so. Yeah. I hope he comes back in and does it. I hope so.
Okay.
I'd have to ask Katie if there's plans to do it, because it's done. It was done this past spring.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.